Good morning. I've had a chance, or be so fortunate or unfortunate, to give a couple of presentations, several presentations over the past couple of months, and I've found that I'm, you know, much more comfortable with the questions at the end than actually presenting. So I thought that's where we'd start. So right now, I'd just like to open it up for questions. Can we do that?
It's not really an option.
Okay. All right. Okay, I guess you're forcing me to present. I'm going to go into a little bit of the background about our immunization information system, which is MIC, stands for the Minnesota Immunization Information Connection. And the data, part of data quality I'll be discussing is some data gaps that we've identified, mainly from electronic sources, but some other sources as well. And I'll just go over some of the solutions and current status of those solutions and some of our future plans. Just real briefly, and the image is much better up there, good. This is just to give you an idea of how our registry is run. The database and the application, of course, is housed at the state, but all of the recruiting and training and first level help desk support are done by our regional coordinators, and that's what this map shows you. And I will be mentioning the regional coordinators again later, so I thought this was important that you could see how this is broken down. Okay, currently we have about 4.4 million clients in our system with over 30 million immunization records. And we have about 800 unique users logging in every day. And from the business hours of 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, we have about 100 to 120 users per hour logged in. Now, user logins for us are a little misleading because we have a unique user agreement that allows the clinic system to sign on behalf of its users, so our users can use shared usernames and passwords just to make it easier. If you have 10 nurses that need to be logging onto the system, it's easier for them to share the one login. So it's not quite an accurate reflection of all of our the diverse number of users that we have. Okay, yesterday Warren was mentioning how we need to present IAS abstracts and our success stories. And so looking at our numbers, you would think that we could say we're successful. That we, as of for 2008, we just reported that we have 97% of kids enrolled in MIC with two or more shots. And we have about 86% of private providers who are enrolled and submitting data. So they are regularly submitting data as well. And of course, 100% of our public providers. But this really brings us to a dilemma. We have some really good reports built into MIC, reminder recall capability, some new assessment reports, and as you can see, we're a very robust, you know, mature, well-populated registry, and we have our regional coordinators just, you know, itching to train users on how to use the reports and run reminder recall and so on and so forth. But pieces of the puzzle are missing, and so as much as we reflect a success, there's always the ongoing struggle of incomplete data. And as you can see, when we start to use the MIC data for assessments, we vary anywhere from 20 to 25% percentage points off of what the NIS rate is. So this shows over time for 43133, the rate from the MIC data that we report annually versus the NIS rate. And I can tell you for 2008, we actually went down to 59% for 43133, and I think the NIS rates stay just about the same as well. So this is a huge problem when we are trying to work with our large metro counties who are just desperate to use MIC data for assessments. They continually come back to us and say, oh, but see, the data's not complete enough. How can we possibly use the data if it's not complete? So what we've done, and I'm not going to focus on how we identify the data gaps because, to me, solving the data gaps is not as important as how we identify them, but we did do some provider surveys starting with our Sentinel site region where we interviewed them on their electronic data. We just verified with them, okay, what is the source? Is it billing? Is it clinical? Is it from an EMR? And then if it was billing data, we asked them, well, how do you get your historical data into your system, or how do you get any paper records into MIC? Then we also did some comparison of some assessment reports. So again, data based off of MIC data compared to what the clinic had in their records. And we've always used our provider activity reports to monitor timeliness. And so while we were able to improve the timeliness of data getting into MIC, that didn't really seem to have a good effect on the completeness of the data. So here are some of the known and possible data gaps that we identified, and I'll go over these in much more detail here. Now, what I'm presenting here is not news to anyone in this room. We know that data that is sent from a billing system will be billing data. So if the clinic, again, gets a paper record or data from any other source, immunization data, that's not in their billing system, so of course that does not get sent to us. And 80% of our data does come from electronic sources. So that's either our flat file loads or HL7 loads or our real time. And the majority of that is billing data. So we rely heavily upon this type of data source. So what we've proposed and have started implementing is to provide support, training, and staff for clinics to get their historical paper records or a record from any other source that is not in their billing system and do direct data entry into MIC for them. So currently, we have piloted with one large metro clinic, and we're currently marketing this to other providers and to our regional staff, where again we're going to work closely with the clinic, with the regional coordinators, to get the paper records to us somehow, whether it's fax or mail, or we go pick up the paper records and bring them back. You know, it's we really want to create a demand for this service where we will then have student staff back enter the data. And the one pilot with the Metro Clinic, we did deem a success. Before the direct data entry of about 200 patient records, which amounted to just over 2,200 shots, their rate for MMR was just around 67%. And after we did the historical data entry, it went up to 78%. So we were able to show them on the assessment report that the true value of getting that historical data into MIC. And so we're hoping to market this to really create a demand and get that service out to the other clinics. And where this was really helpful, it was time consuming. I actually met with the regional coordinator and the local public health person at the clinic with the clinic staff two times. So there's, 2 hours out of my day just proposing the pilot to them. And then really getting an understanding of their system. Oops. Sorry, there's one point I wanted to make with this pilot. They currently are getting data to us electronically from their practice management system, and it's billing data. So again, they were an ideal candidate because they gave me a huge box of paper records that had not been entered into MIC, so we were able to back enter that. However, we are talking to them about moving to get the data from their EMR, which would then solve some of those problems because they do take the time. There were two clinics. One clinic was very astute on getting a paper record entered into the EMR. So again, if we switch to getting data from the EMR, we will get those shots. However, it still doesn't cover the records that get scanned in and not any kind of manual entry into the EMR. So even if we move to getting data from the EMR, we will still have some gaps from the records that get scanned in to the EMR. There's no way to extract the data, of course, from an image, at least not that I'm aware of. So I guess the point with this one clinic and this one scenario as we move forward is I think that there will always be data gaps, even from EMR data, unless you really work with each and every clinic to find out what is their process, how do they get the data into the EMR, and really work with them on ensuring that every single piece of immunization data is in an extractable format. MA billed shots, Medicaid billed shots, This is more anecdotal than anything, but we had been hearing some rumors throughout the metro that there some Medicaid providers were billing just for the administration fee and not for the shot itself because it was going they were going to get reimbursed, you know, through the VFC program through Medicaid. And just to kind of test that theory, we decided to move forward with establishing regular downloads from DHS to get that Medicaid population. So in December of last year, we loaded about 1.2 million shots from our DHS Medicaid department. Now 20% were new shots to MIC, so I think we did show that there is some sort of gap, either from maybe perhaps the clinic isn't completely participating in MIC yet, or maybe there are some shots that are getting billed through Medicaid but aren't getting, you know, into their separate billing system or practice management system. But of course, as Kansas illustrated earlier this week, there's quite a few data quality issues with DHS data. The main one being that the vaccination date they sent us was 2 or 3 or 10 to 16 days later than what a clinic had already entered for that same shot. So we're kind of uncertain if we're going to proceed with regular uploads with them. However, I can say now, after seeing Kansas's presentation and their plan to just delete the duplicate DHS shot, I think that's what we'll do too in moving forward. So I expect that we will continue to receive the DHS data, but just put it as the low, not as trustworthy data and delete it if we feel it's a duplicate. Lately, we've had an increase of non-traditional providers who are entering into MIC, such as pharmacists, minute clinics that are located just about anywhere. The Target department store has their own Target clinics now that are entering or that are administering shots, and they are all covered under our immunization data sharing law, so we've been training them and moving forward with them. Another large group is the Minnesota Visiting Nurses Association. You know, they're constantly running clinics or providing in-home health care to the entire population. And they may not have electronic systems, as is the case with the Minnesota Visiting Nurses Association. They do not have an electronic system for storing their data, or they don't have access to the internet. So our solution, which we'll be implementing this year, just to help address these non-traditional providers who are seeing our population but not getting their data reported to us, is to have them attend our immunization program's Mark of Excellence training. It's training specifically geared for non-traditional providers to advise them mainly on storage and handling procedures, but we'll also throw in a MIC component to them to let them know, here, you're administering these doses, you need to get them into MIC, and give them the options as to how they can do that. And so to really work with them to find out, do they have electronic systems that we can work with pulling data from? And then one of another large gap in data which is what I feel has affected our 43133 rate going down, is this one right here. We've had several large health systems that were submitting data to us from an older practice management system. And then as they transition to an EMR, inevitably that data load gets disrupted. That clinic and their staff are so busy and frantic in learning the EMR that, trust me, getting them to talk about extracting data from their EMR to send to us falls at the bottom of the list. So they'll tell us, "Well, come back to us in about a year when we've implemented, and then we will resume our data loads." And the only way we can really, that I can see, and I'm open to other ideas on this, is to just tweak our processes when we work with them to really find out, okay, when are you implementing? Okay, we will call you immediately, you know, when that is done, and really just have a lot of the groundwork in place so that we can be right there at the ready when they're ready to talk to us again about getting data in. And I'll just give one recent example. We had the Health East Clinic System. They're a large system in the East Metro serving mainly St. Paul and Ramsey counties. They had been getting data to us, again, from their older system, but they transitioned to their EMR in March of 2007, and since that time, we had not been getting data from them, and you could just see the rates and the numbers fall in that area quite a bit. Now, starting in December, and I think into January, actually, they did up. They had transitioned to their EMR, and we're now ready to finally, you know, resume data loads. So we backloaded 2 years, almost 2 years worth of data, which was about 700,000 shots, and 60% of them were new to our system. So we had had a huge gap that had built up over the past couple of years. Now this example actually also is our first real-time data exchange with an EMR. We had been working with them actively for a year just on the real-time piece. There were several technical hurdles that we had to overcome, extensive testing that had to be done because we had never done real-time transactions before, so our code was a little rusty. But we began getting real-time data from their EMR in February of this year. So we get about 500 to 700 shots per day from them in this real-time mode. And it's just their clinic system. They'll include hospitals later this year. But the interesting thing with this is there's still data quality issues. And they're kind of ones that we hadn't really thought of before. For instance, I had been expecting my son's record to come through. We actually go to one of their clinics. And so I was eagerly looking for the historical batch load to populate the record. And it finally did, and the shots looked right. They were the ones he'd been given. But when I checked the responsible person tab, it had my mother listed as the mother. So there were two records. There was me listed as mother, and then my mother listed as my son's mother. So I'm like, I wonder what are they pulling? Where are they getting that from? And it turns out they were grabbing the emergency contact and sending that to us as mother for all contacts. And again, something that we don't and traditionally had not audited for, because it's how can we possibly know that they're going to grab the emergency contact and not the guarantor, you know, for the or a mother, make everyone the mother. So anyway, we're working with them on that. And then with one of the real-time instances, a female had been in the office and had gotten three shots, and our regional coordinator was very astute and had happened to be at the clinic on that day, so they looked her record up immediately following the doses being administered, and only two of the three were in there, and it was because they had not yet coded for HPV. And again, that's something we can easily address. We can always now set up similar to what the data quality provider questionnaires recommend, just making sure that you have the blend of all immunizations that you're expecting. And now I'd just like to go into real briefly some of our future plans. The biggest one that we're hoping will really give us some good results is what we're just calling the Reminder Recall Project. It will be the first time that from the immunization program state level that we will be sending out, actually they won't be reminders, they will be recall. We will be targeting kids who are overdue in MIC, and we're using about seven different zip codes that are very low income, at high risk for falling through the cracks, and targeting just specifically those zip codes. And of course, to not step on anyone's toes, we are going to first go to our regional coordinators and say, do you want to run this recall or should we? And then they can work with the local public health or the provider to just see, you know, who has the time, who has the resources to run these recalls. Again, I think in most cases it will come back to us because it's, again, a service we're offering this year. And we are going to be sending the first, actually it should be recall, will be sent this month, the month of April, and then two more sent over the course of 2009. And the importance of this, there are two objectives to this process. One is will targeted recalls increase immunization rates for that population? Now, we will be sent, some of the zip codes are where we know providers are not actively participating in MIC yet. So we know that we will get several calls from the parents or the clinic will, or the local public health agency will, saying, oh, we got this letter, no, our child's up to date. But that's what I want to hear about. For every record, for every incomplete record, we're going to be able to answer some questions. Now, the first one, the obvious one I didn't put on here, if they're incomplete, they could be truly overdue. You know, let's assume the data in MIC is complete. They're truly overdue. They go in, they get caught up. Or we hope to determine that if they're incomplete and we get a return letter, that maybe they're MOGI. So then we get to go down the MOGI path. You know, where have they moved? Do we have an alternate address? Do we have a phone number, anything that we can contact them with? Or the patient's provider doesn't use MIC. And then that, again, will tell us at the state who we need to focus on targeting and actively recruiting further. And then the patient's provider could be using MIC, but is not submitting the data or is not coding correctly. So this will be a very important project for us, the first one of its kind in our state. So I do hope that by next year, we'll have a lot of additional answers to where the data gaps could be. And then finally, I'd just like to mention that our regional registry coordinators who do the recruiting and training are going to be coming more involved in our AFIX process. So they're going to help more with the assessments. And if the data on MIC are not complete, then they'll be in the ideal position to track down why that is. So I do ask you for at the end, if you have other ideas as to where some of these data gaps could be, please let me know. This is just like a thorn in our Minnesota sides, and we'd love to hear your ideas. So thank you.